Vaishnavis. Yea, those persons, Mayaya, by the deluding energy, Te, of you, Hata, has been lost, made Hasaha, whose intelligence, Swat, your, Pada Aravindam, lotus feet, Bhava, of mundane existence, Sindhu, the ocean. Potam, the boat for crossing. Upasate, worship. Kama Lavaya, for obtaining trivial pleasures. Tesham, there. Rasi, you bestow. Isha, O Lord. Kaman, desires. Niraye, in hell, api, even, yea, which desires, su, can be available. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Your lotus feet are the true vessel to take one across the ocean of mundane nations. This is Kardama Muni speaking. Only persons deprived of their intelligence by the spell of the deluding energy will worship those feet with a view to attain the trivial and momentary pleasures of the senses, which even persons rotting in hell can attain. However, O my Lord, you are so kind that you bestow mercy even upon them. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, there are two kinds of devotees, those who desire material pleasures and those who desire nothing but service to the Lord. Material pleasures can be attained even by hogs and dogs, whose condition of life is hellish. The hog also eats, sleeps, and enjoys sex life to the full extent, and it is also very satisfied with such hellish enjoyment of material existence. Modern yogis advise that because one has senses, one must enjoy to the fullest extent like cats and dogs. Yet one can go on and practice yoga. This is condemned here by Kardama Muni. He says that such material pleasures are available for cats and dogs in a hellish condition. The Lord is so kind that if so-called yogis are satisfied by hellish pleasures, He can give them facilities to attain all the material pleasures they desire, but they cannot attain the perfectional stage attained by Kardama Muni. Hellish and demoniac persons do not actually know what is the ultimate attainment in perfection, and therefore they think that sense gratification is the highest goal of life. They advise that one can satisfy the senses and at the same time by reciting some mantras can cheaply aspire for perfection. Such persons are described here as hata medasaha, which means those whose brains are spoiled. They aspire for material enjoyment by perfection of yoga or meditation. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated by the Lord that the intelligence of those who worship the demigods has been spoiled. Similarly, here too, it is stated by Kardama Muni that one who aspires after material enjoyment by practice of yoga has spoiled his brain substance and is fool number one. Actually, the intelligent practitioner of yoga should aspire for nothing else but to cross over the ocean of nescience by worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to see the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord is so kind, however, that even today, persons whose brain substance is spoiled are given the benediction to become cats, dogs, or hogs and enjoy material happiness from sex life and sense gratification. The Lord confirms this benediction in Bhagavad Gita. Whatever a person aspires to receive from me, I offer him as he desires. Om Gina Timidam Dasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakaramayam Dadati Swapadanti Kam. Okay, so this is Kardama Muni, and he's offering prayers to Lord Vishnu, who's appeared before him. He's been practicing yoga, and as mentioned several times here, at least a couple times in the purport, he's attained a perfectional stage. It says here, in reference to some yogis, says he can the yogis. Yeah, they might get some material pleasures, but they cannot attain the perfectional stage attained by Kardama Muni. So Prabhupada, in the purport, is confirming Kardama Muni attained a perfectional stage. Okay? So that's significant. And Prabhupada, and also Prabhupada is elaborating upon the point that Kardama Muni is making, that these momentary pleasures, trivial and momentary pleasures of the senses, they can be attained even by persons rotting in hell can attain those. And Prabhupada, and the purport elaborates upon that. And to the point where he says, Kardama Muni, similarly, here it is stated by Kardama Muni that one who aspires after material enjoyment by practice of yoga has spoiled his brain substance and is fool number one. Okay? So Kardama Muni has attained a perfectional stage as a result of his practice of yoga. He's condemning material enjoyment and particularly praying to the Lord for material enjoyment, while worshiping the Lord for material enjoyment. Okay? I don't want to really let the cat out of the bag, but in the very next verse, he's going to ask Lord Vishnu for a wife. In the very next verse, tomorrow, we're going to hear he's going to do exactly what he's saying somebody shouldn't do. So he's going to do exactly what he's saying somebody who's spoiled his brain, substance is going to do. Now, how do we understand this? How can we understand what's going on here? It's kind of strange. You know, he just got finished practicing for 10,000 years, or I think it was mentioned 10,000 years practicing yoga. He's achieved a perfectional stage, stated, confirmed by Prabhupada. And he's condemning praying, worshiping the Lord for fulfillment of material desires. And then he's going to do it. He's going to do exactly that. How do we understand this? Okay, well, there's a few points that we could bring out. One is, different people have different temperaments. Not everybody's the same, even in Krishna consciousness, even in devotional service. For example, relevant example, Lord Brahma initially, he was created the universe and he wanted to populate it. So the first people he asked to help him populate the universe was who? Four Kumaras. Right, the four Kumaras. And what did they do? They refused. They wouldn't have any part of it. They said, sorry, Dad, we can't help you here with this one. And Lord Brahma got angry, of course, and we know that rest of the story. So the four Kumaras, they were also sons of Lord Brahma. Kardamuni's a son. of Lord Brahma, one of the mentally generated sons of Lord Brahma. But unlike the four Kumaris, they refused. Narada Muni, he's also before Kardama Muni. He was also asked to get married and help Lord Brahma in his program, his mission to populate the universe. What did he do? He also refused. He also wouldn't do it. See, so, yeah, and he went on to become the great sage Narada Muni. Now, here, Kardama Muni, he actually, and this is where I meant by different temperaments, he was given that instruction and he accepted it. You see, so he's not in total Maya. He's actually, he has some legitimate motive for praying to Lord Vishnu for a wife. It's not like he's crazy. You know, he just finished practicing yoga for 10,000 years. He's attained the perfectional stage. He's actually seeing Lord Vishnu in front of him. It's not like he's just meditating and he's seeing the super soul in his heart. He's open. He's got his eyes wide open. Lord Vishnu's come to see him. Okay? You know, it's about as perfectional as you can get. And he's asking him for a wife because he has an instruction. He's an obedient. That was his temperament. He's an very submissive and obedient son. And he has this instruction from his father to help populate the universe. And he's prepared to cooperate. Right? And we're going to hear how Lord Vishnu appreciates that. And he kind of describes the whole plan to Kardama Muni. So that's how we can understand how it is that Kardama Muni is in this situation, because otherwise it wouldn't make any sense. Because in general, the tippy top most important thing in all the Vedic literatures is to achieve what he's just achieved, perfection in yoga, the darshan of Lord Vishnu like that. You would think that if it wasn't for what I just described, that the authorities would go, oh, well, you know what? we wanted you to help populate the universe, but, I mean, here, you've already achieved perfection in yoga. Don't worry about it. We'll get somebody else to do that. You know, you just keep doing your yoga, professional yoga thing. But no, because he had this, it's all part of the plan. It was part of Krishna's plan. He was humble, submissive, cooperative, and, he was willing to be part of Krishna's, Lord Brahma, and ultimately Krishna's plan to populate the universe. So that's how we could understand that. Now, but at the same time, why he's as we mentioned, he's attained the perfectional stage of yoga, so he has no desire for sense gratification. So still, it still seems a little bit strange that he's going to get so much absorbed in, because Lord Vishnu starts describing to him after he finishes offering his prayers. Lord Vishnu describes to him what's going to happen. He's going to have nine daughters, and then Lord Vishnu is going to appear as his son Kapila. That's a lot. He's going to be engaged in a lot of sense gratification. So what? Why would Lord Vishnu be, kind of arranging this type of thing? Well, Krishna likes to fulfill desires. Like we hear at the end of the purport here, it says here, the Lord is so kind, however, that even today, persons whose brain substance is spoiled are given the benediction to become cats, dogs, and hogs and enjoy material happiness. The Lord confirms this benediction in Bhagavad Gita. Whatever a person aspires to receive from me, I offer him as he desires. So Krishna is kind of into fulfilling desires. And the fact of the matter is that everybody here in this material world, to a greater or lesser degree, has material desires. I'll read something from this is an excerpt from a lecture that I heard recently. So I titled it, Who is a Fallen Soul? Papa goes, Papa, no, actually I titled it like that because Prabhupada starts off by saying, who is a fallen soul? Fallen soul means anyone who has taken birth in this material world, he is a fallen soul. Never mind what he is. He may be Brahma, or he may be an insignificant ant. Anyone who is within this material world is a fallen soul. So in other words, everybody who's in this material world has material desires. We're all fallen souls here in the material world. So this is not a unique thing that Krishna is doing, fulfilling these desires of Kardama Muni. It hasn't happened yet in the Bhagavatam, but we will be hearing about, and we all know about what, with Dhruva Maharaj. Same sort of thing. Dhruva Maharaj went and he performed austerities for, was it 6 months? And then he saw Lord Vishnu. And he was worshipping him for, the benediction to have a kingdom greater than his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather, like that. So, but, he achieved perfection in yoga. Lord Vishnu came, appeared before him. But still, he had those desires fulfilled. He actually regretted it. He regretted that he approached Lord Vishnu with such childish desires. But anyway, that's what happened. So Krishna does that. He fulfills the desires. He fulfilled Dhruva Maharaj's desire. He became, I think, for 36,000 years, he was ruling the universe from the pole star. And similarly, Kardama Muni is getting some sort of a desire here fulfilled. But in both cases, it's not going to be an impediment to their progressive spiritual development. It's Krishna's, at least in the cases of these very highly elevated devotees, he's fulfilling the desire in such a way that it doesn't interfere with their progress towards pure devotional service. But, okay, yeah, here's the point, though. So, upon hearing this, though, we should not think, okay, well, Krishna likes to fulfill desires, so I think I'll try to become a pure devotee, and I'll see if I can get all my material desires fulfilled to boot. Part of the deal, why not? No, that's not a good idea to do like that. We should... We shouldn't do that. We should just be completely focused on the bullseye, just pure devotional service, and don't risk getting entangled in any way, in the material world. Just like I mentioned, Dhruva Maharaj, he got his material desire fulfilled, but he regretted it. He wasn't happy about that. So best thing is, Anya bilasita sunyam jnana karmadi anavritam. What is it? How's it go? Anukalyana Krishna anusilam bhagya. Free from all desires for, material enjoyment, fruitive activities, mental speculation. Just, put that aside. And really just try to, achieve the perfectional stage as quickly as possible. Now, here's a tip on how to do that. I was listening to a lecture the other day, and Prabhupada was talking about perfection, and he gave this interesting little tip here on how to achieve perfection. He goes, there was a devotee of Krishna. He's written a nice song. He says, Shrutim apade smritim itade bharata manye bhava bitaha. It's from the Padyavali. He says, well, people are taking shelter of the Vedic literature, people who have become afraid of this conditional life. What is the end of Vedic literature? Just to get oneself liberated from this material entanglement. So he says, the person who wrote that verse, he says, people, those who are afraid of material life, material entanglement, let them worship Shruti, Veda, or Smriti, or Mahabharata. Let them be engaged in that way. Srutim apade, smritim itade, bharatam anye, bhajantu bhavabitaha. Then, what is that? He says, now, I am not going to do that. The person who wrote that verse. I'm not going to do that. It's like having a mock conversation here. What are you going to do? Aham iha nandam vande yashalinde param brahma. I shall worship Nanda Maharaj. Why? You have left all Veda and Puranas, everything. Why are you going to worship Nanda Maharaj? He says, because he has captivated the Supreme Lord playing as a crawling child in his courtyard. So I shall worship Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj is so great that God is obliged to come to him to play as a child and crawling in his courtyard. So, and then Prabhupada concludes, so if you approach such a devotee who can bring God to crawl in his courtyard, oh, that is all perfection. So that's, an inside tip. We're interested in achieving all perfection. So Prabhupada's pointing out that, by quoting this, even a more powerful process, a more effective process than taking shelter of the Vedic literatures, trying to take shelter of Krishna himself, taking shelter of the devotee, the pure devotee, who can bring God to crawl in his courtyard. Well, Prabhupada's like that. Prabhupada didn't bring God to crawl in his courtyard, but Prabhupada brought God to spread a Krishna conscious movement. In other words, if you take shelter of a pure devotee who has that, intimate connection with Krishna, that's a better program, than trying to take shelter of Krishna directly. That's the point that's being made here. So, we should try to do that. That's what this Krishna consciousness movement is all about. It's all about giving us the opportunity to, achieve all perfection by taking shelter of the pure devotee. And we should be focused on that and not get distracted by if there's different things going on that might, disturb our mind. We always have to just remembering what we're really trying to do, remembering the goal, we should, adjust things, see things in a proper perspective. Here's a very, this is also an excerpt from another lecture Prabhupada gave where he kind of makes this point. He talks about shama, tolerance. He says, tolerance means you should not be disturbed. Suppose you were in this Krishna conscious society. Now, you cannot expect that all the members of the society will be first class men. How can we expect? We are collecting members of the society from all classes of men. So there may be a man in goodness, a man in passion, a man in ignorance. But if you think, oh, this man is not good, that man is not good. No, Prabhupada goes, no, you should be tolerant. You haven't got any connection with this man or that. You are connected with the philosophy, with the process of life. He says, just like the same example, he says, suppose you're on a ship. You don't find just all men to your choice. There may be different kinds of men. But what is that to you? You have to cross the Atlantic, patiently cross, sit down tightly on the ship, and take advantage of the opportunity. So, obvious analogy, Sit down, situate yourself firmly in the Krishna consciousness movement, and take advantage of the opportunity. Don't be disturbed if somebody is, not to your liking or whatever, or this situation, that circumstance. No, just like it says here, just situate yourself firmly in the Krishna conscious movement and make your journey. Goes on to say, this is called shama. Shama means excuse and tolerate. Suppose somebody has offended you. Anybody ever been offended by somebody in the Krishna consciousness movement? Okay. Hope it wasn't me, but
if it was, please do it.
But Prabhupada says, excuse him. That is another kind of penance. So that's a very good practical instruction. So, we shouldn't be disturbed, allow our minds to be disturbed by things that other devotees do, even if they are inappropriate. So what? Prabhupada says tolerate. And also we shouldn't be allow our minds to get allured by this material enjoyment, which is, you know, the main topic of today's purport. Prabhupada and Kardama Muni both are, you know, talking about how these trivial and momentary pleasures of the senses, they're meant for persons rotting in hell. So we should, you know, try to practice not being attracted, not being allured. And one good thing to remember is that verse in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse, Nasato vijite bhavo, nabhavo vijite sataha, ubayor api dristontas, twanios tat vidarshabi. It goes that those who are seers, the sages have concluded by studying the nature of both, that of the non-existent, and in parentheses it says the material body, there's no endurance. And of the existent, or in other words, the soul, there is no cessation. Thus, seers have concluded by studying the nature of both. See? So, this material body is temporary. And another way of saying that is it's limited. It's very limited. And Prabhupada explained elsewhere that there's a certain amount of energy that's stored up in the body. It's already predestined, comes along with the body. You get a certain body, and it has a certain amount of energy, a certain amount of happiness, distress. It's all stored up. It's all prearranged, and you can't change that. So it's foolish to use our energy to try to expand upon that enjoyment. It's not possible. I'll give you an example. This is a practical example. Here we have two tubes of toothpaste. Okay? Yeah. This is a full tube. Everybody can see? I became a little bit jealous of Gaudachandra, but I don't know how to use computers, so I'm going to have to use my own props here. So this is a full tube of toothpaste, and this is an empty tube of toothpaste. So this is like a newborn baby, It's like brand new, and it's just full of toothpaste. And if I opened this up, I could poke it anywhere, and toothpaste will come out, no problem, because it's just full of toothpaste. So it's like a young child. They're just full of energy, I remember once when I was, I remember once when I was a kid, you could enjoy in any situation. Just a very quick example. I took accordion lessons, and I went with a friend, and we were standing waiting for the bus. We didn't like to do it. Our mothers kind of made us do it. So we were standing waiting for the bus, and it had rained recently, so there was puddles, and just off the curb there were some puddles. So I said to my friend, it wasn't even that funny. I said to my friend, let's stand right over there by the puddle. Because thinking that when the bus comes in, it's going to go through the puddle and it's going to splash us with water. Because, when the car goes through the puddle, the water comes splash. And I said, that ought to get us. And I said, it wasn't even that funny. But, the thought, for some reason, we both started cracking up. And we must have laughed for like 5 or 10 minutes. It wasn't even that funny. I mean, so it's just remind me, kids could have a great time over anything. It's just some silly situation. So, it's like that. But when you get older, you're like this. Well, this is finished. This is completely finished. Actually, even if I do my expert program, most people don't even bother to do this. Most people just kind of get rid of their tubes of toothpaste way before this, but there's no toothpaste in here anymore. I said it's finished. I curled it up and squeezed it, it's gone. See, so anyway, the point is that we have a limited amount of energy in this body, so we should use it to chant Hare Krishna and engage in devotional service. Because like the tube of toothpaste, when it's gone, Nobody puts more toothpaste in this tube. They throw it out. When I finish this class, I will also be throwing. I might save it for another class someplace, but generally people finish the tube and they just throw it out. That's it. So it's like that with the body. When the energy's finished, it's finished. So, there's the expression, make hay while the sun shines. All of us are someplace in between here and here. That's, still alive. So with whatever energy we have left in our tube, so to speak, we should use it to be, fully engaged in devotional service, remembering that when it's finished, it's finished. That's it. So I will stop there. Does anybody have any question? Satchit and North Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. At the beginning of your class, you were mentioning about Krishna fulfills all the desires of his devotees. So we have seen in previous verses how Kardama Muni has been meditating for thousands of years. The Lord actually knew what he wanted to. He told him, you're going to get married. He gave descriptions. Beautiful girl will come with a very elevated, like his father and mother. So then he's fulfilling his desires because he had that. Kardama Muni had that desire. Now, in a separate story, we have a devotee, also a Kim Priyavrata, who was actually meditating for many, many years. And Narada Muni actually told him, don't get involved in married life. And Narada Muni, pure devotee, the guru for many of them. But anyway, his father wanted him to be king of the whole universe. But he didn't want it, he refused. So he had to bring the grandfather, Lord Brahma, to convince him. So my question to you, I want you to see, what is your comment in this regard? Because he had a pure desire, Kim Priyavrata. He just wants to get out of this world. His guru told him, yes, what is the use of this material world? He was afraid, in one sense, that after all these penances and austerities, I'm going to get involved again in materialistic way of living. So it appears that actually his desire is not fulfilled by the Lord in the way that, we would think. So can you comment on that?
Okay. Yeah, you're right. His desire wasn't fulfilled. He was desiring to stay celibate, brahmachari. Well, I'll just say a couple of little things, and Archita, I'll pass the baton to Archita. Unlike the four Kumaras, they refused the order of Lord Brahma, but they weren't starting from scratch. They were elevated. They came out elevated. They were already elevated souls. I don't think Priyavrata's who is a disciple of Narada Muni, is kind of in that same category. He did the right thing. Although his desire didn't get fulfilled somehow, but he did the right thing by cooperating and, kind of doing what Lord Brahma, who eventually got involved, asked him to do. And even, Narada Muni, he kind of accepted that. I'll leave it to Archita. Go ahead. I'm not really coming up with anything.
I think
really
I have the answer
question.
Too, but I'm going to give it this to you.
Yeah. How is it that he didn't get his desire fulfilled? He was a disciple of a pure devotee, Narada Muni. He had the desire to stay celibate, and somehow or another he got overruled. So what's the understanding?
It's been a long time since I read that pastime, but I do recall that he was assured that he would not be entangled, because that was his reason for not following the instruction of his father. He did not want to be entangled in material situation. But he was given the assurance that, yes, if you fulfill this desire of your father and your grandfather, you will not become entangled.
Didn't he become
entangled?
And
that is the level of existence of pure devotees. They do what seems to be material, just like Prabhupada was married, Lord Chaitanya himself was married twice. It seems that they're getting entangled, but they're not, because they're beyond that. They're beyond the modes of nature. So they're not entangled, even when they seem to engage in things that would entangle others. So Priya Bharata was given that assurance that yes, if you go ahead and get married and have children, you will not become entangled in like a normal person would, in other words.
And is that what happened?
So he didn't have to be afraid.
That's what happened, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. Rabindranath, who had...
Yeah, you mentioned about how the four Kumaras refused the order of their father to get married. But you also mentioned the same thing about Narada Muni did the same thing. What's the history of that?
I read it. I don't think it's in the Bhagavatam, but I remember reading it someplace. I can't remember where. I'll be honest, I probably read it on the internet that he also refused to get married. Can anybody help me out here? Does anybody have any Vedic, Shastric reference for Narada to confirm that Narada Muni refused to get married? Okay, we'll do some further research. And we'll get back to you. Suvas Prabhu?
Thank you. Thank you for a nice class. I guess I'm thinking that if here we see a pastime where a person who actually sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead and actually has a conversation with him, and still he wants to enjoy material life, and how is that? I mean, like, how is it that someone can actually have that association and then still want material life?
Well, I tried to touch upon that in the class, that he had an instruction from his father. He's Lord Brahma has to populate the universe, and he's requesting Kardama Muni to cooperate and, assist him in that regard. And Kardama Muni is willing to do that. He's willing to do that. It's not like he's like a lusty guy or something like that. No, it's more to it than that. He's a self-controlled person. He's a perfectional yogi, but he's got that instruction from his spiritual master, and from his father, who was like a spiritual master to him, and he's prepared to cooperate. So I think that it's a lot different from somebody like an average guy off the street wanting to enjoy material life. I don't think his program is the same. It's a different mentality, It's true that he is asking for a wife, but he's in a different headspace than, somebody who's trying to meet a guy or a girl on the street, something like that. It's not like that. I don't know if that satisfies you. But
well, I'm thinking that, is it the same as, like, let's say if somebody comes to Krishna consciousness, and they stay for a while, and they execute devotional service, and they have association, they take prasadam, but then one day they say, well, I'm going to leave now. I'm going to leave Krishna consciousness. So okay, we can say a lot of things about that, but there's got to be something more than just, sometimes we say, well, they were offensive. Because of offenses they left. But we don't really know that that's true. In other words, what would be, I'm kind of comparing that with Kardama Muni.
I got to come back and give you the same answer. Back in the old days, people really took what the father said. It was a big deal. In the Vedic culture, you don't disobey your parents. Especially if your father is Lord Brahma, it's a big deal, So Kardama Muni he got that order from his father's requesting him to do that. He probably had some understanding of who his father was, and he's going to cooperate. So it's not like somebody who's practicing for a while and is kind of blooping to go out and enjoy. No, I don't think he thinks, he's not thinking like, he's speaking very humbly to Lord Vishnu that I'm such a fool, blah, blah, blah. I'm asking for this thing that I just condemn. But, internally, even beyond what he's saying, there's that understanding that, no, my father asked me to do this. This is my duty. I have a duty here to perform. My father asked me to, be in the Grihastha Ashram and help populate the universe. And I got to do that. Aren't you doing it? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Your conclusion is proper, and the evidence is that after enjoying and giving her 9 daughters, he left. He was just turned around and left. He was about to go. And then she had to beg him to give her some way of liberation. And then he gave her, you know, a son. So that was the proof. He was not attached. It's not that he was, you know, prayed for a wife, he got a wife, and then he just became like, you know, Jamil. Was trying to enjoy all up to his 80s, and no, he wasn't like that. He wanted a wife. He wanted to help populate the universe. He did that. He gave 9 daughters who were married to 9 appropriate sages. And then he was leaving. He was walking away, and she said, please give me a son that can give me liberation. So he gave her Kapila. But then he still left. It's not that he came back and said, all right, okay, I'll give you more. He gave her Kapila, and then he took off. He was gone. So he was definitely detached. He was not attached to married life. He was not attached to the enjoying spirit. He fulfilled his role, and then he left.
Okay, so I'm kind of over time. Should I?
That was fast. Thank you. I just would like to make a point, and that is this. And we may be missing a major point in this whole chapter. Although it does say that if one becomes very much involved with sense pleasure, sense gratification of one sort or another, and one can fall down very steeply, sometimes almost to the point of being unable to recover from that situation, and it is a serious matter. However, the book is filled with evidences of means by which we can, or remedies by which we can overcome these fall downs. Fall down does not mean it's the end of everything, although we should consider it like that, because it's very difficult to come back. Okay? But on the other hand, we can come back. And the point is this, is that the remedies that are given, one after another, hearing about the Lord, chanting about the Lord, remembering the Lord, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, worshiping the Lord, these are the practices that purify us and help us overcome the fall down that may be there. So it's not all as lost as a result of fall down, although we should think that, so that we don't fall down. But once it does happen, we should think, yes, I have to do the best that I can to overcome this situation, which is taking me away from God instead of taking me to God. So, therefore, our process in Krishna consciousness is that even if you do fall down, you can rise up. And if you rise up, you can also, not only you rise up, or we rise up, you can take other people up too. So we should not think that all is lost at any time. Because as long as there is Krishna, there is hope. And as long as we have hope, then we can pursue the activities that will bring us to a higher and higher level. Even if we were down, we can come up. And if you go up, don't think you can't come down. You can come down also. So wherever you are, we should also think, my every moment is dependent upon the mercy of Krishna. And if I don't get his mercy, everything is gone. And we're all here. It doesn't mean that we don't have... we can't fall. We can. Krishna withdraws his grace, withdraws his affection, withdraws his power in any of us, we can go down. So we should all think that we're riding on the desperation of God's mercy. And if the mercy is there, you go up. If the mercy is withdrawn, and it can be, you can go down. So we should all think that we're walking on a string. And that string is very thin. And as long as we know that we're here because of mercy, love, of God's love, God's affection, God's consideration, God's affection, not my efforts. My efforts come by God's mercy. We should not think, well, I made this effort, so why would I have to be thankful to God? I did it. No, you did not do anything. God gave you the strength. He gave you the power. He gave you the love. He gave you the enthusiasm. He gave you the eagerness. He gave you all that. So that's what you should be thankful for. And if you're thankful for, you'll always be looking up rather than down.
steadily doing deity service, huh?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Where are you left?
I went to Florida because my mother lives in Florida. She's getting older, so she's a single woman too. So I was just going to help her out.
That's what temple.
That's going to help her out. So yeah.
That's it.
How do you turn this on? How do you turn it?
Oh, you push it up like this.
Push it like that?
In order to push it up. Push it up to the other side. Maybe, yeah, do that. You push it up this way. Yeah, down that bit. Hold it for 3 seconds. Down that bit. I'm going to help.